Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. We welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. That's 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us on the line Mr. Moshe Fox, who is, my understanding, he is religious and political and religious affairs at the Israeli Embassy in Washington, D.C. Is that your correct title, sir?
Well, I'm a minister for public and interreligious affairs, and when I say minister, I don't mean a rank with the church, but I mean rank in the diplomatic corps.
All right, fine. Well, tell us a little bit about what your work is here in the United States.
I have been assigned to our embassy in Washington, D.C., the biggest Israeli mission around the world as far as number of diplomats and employees. I have been assigned to do the what I call the non-political work, namely the non-government-to-government contact. Nowadays, public diplomacy is trying to reach out not only to government officials and other officials in other departments of the government, other branches of the government, but to other audiences. For instance, churches, unions, campuses, faculty, students, Jewish communities, civic clubs, think tanks. So there is a lot of people, a lot of audiences, a lot of groups that the embassy is trying to reach out beyond the government-to-government contact.
All right, you hold that thought for just a moment here. And now, of course, as we look here at what's going on in our own country, you're trying to reach the population. And what's the message you're trying to get out? What are you trying to get people to understand?
We would like to try and explain is mostly about the century-long conflict that we are unfortunately engaged into, and that makes the region quite
unstable.
Unstable, yes. And what we are trying to bring in is a different perspective. What most of the people are getting here, especially from the media outlets, is sort of a black and white picture, 30 seconds nutshell story, and try and explain a very complicated, a very difficult to resolve conflict, which is rooted in with a lot of history and with a lot of effort that need to be brought in to resolve it.
All right, fine. Well, we're going to be back in just a moment here as other stations begin joining our network. And we'd like, of course, to get your view of what's going on over there, because this, of course, conflict goes back all the way time of Abraham, it would appear, then the conflict between certainly Israel's legitimate son and his illegitimate son. And this just keeps going on and on and on. We'll be back in just a moment here with Mr. Fox and let him explain his position. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this afternoon is Mr. Moshe Fox, who is the Minister of Religious and Interfaith Matters with the Israeli Embassy in Washington, D.C. And, of course, he wanted to talk to our audience today about the issues that exist in the Holy Land, because they really go back to Isaac and of course, his counterpart, who was the offspring of Hagar. So there's certainly been an enmity between the Jewish race and the Arabs going back to that time, hasn't there?
Yes, indeed. I mean, this is a conflict that goes way back. It has got a new shape and form about 120 years ago, when Jews started to come back to their ancient homeland and to the Holy Land, and they were facing a lot of resentment from the indigenous people who didn't like this idea, to say the least, and applied violence to stop Jews from living in their promised land.
All right, fine. Well, of course, how do you look upon what's going on over there at the present time?
Well, there have been some recent developments in the last couple of weeks, which seem to be significant ones, and I like to enumerate them very briefly to indicate that we might be facing a change, a different course in the weeks and months to come. A change that has been based on three developments. One, a president of the United States who was reelected, an administration who has reiterated its commitment to be engaged and involved in bringing an end to the conflict and try to resolve it. Second change, a prime minister of Israel and with him the cabinet and the parliament, the Knesset, who came forward to introduce a change in the long-time policy of Israel and introduced a disengagement plan, which essentially calls for pulling out Israeli forces from certain parts of the territories, to dismantle Jewish settlements in the Gaza Strip and a few of them in other territories too. And the third change, which has been taking place.
Hold that thought right now. Our guest this afternoon is Moshe Fox, who, of course, is Minister of Religious and Interfaith Affairs with the Israeli Embassy. And he's talking about, of course, what's going on in the Middle East. So pick up the story. Certainly, we have such an unstable situation over there. And yet, what is happening in the Middle East is sooner or later going to have a profound impact upon the lives of everybody listening to this program. Because I am very concerned the idea that now the elections are over in Iraq, everything's going to be fine, our troops are going to come home, is really a fool's belief. I believe our troops are going to stay there. I feel that we're going to actually be expanding the war in the Middle East. I wish it weren't true. But until the Arabs and the Israelis are able to live together in peace, there is never going to be peace in that part of the world. So why don't you pick up the story there?
Let me just finish up with one change that took place very recently, and that is stepping down, the passing away of Yasser Arafat and the new leadership, which has been elected with the leading person Muhammad Abbas. This is the first time that in this region leaders have been selected by ballots rather by bullets, as they were traditionally been so in the past. And we have a new leader with new commitments, and essentially a leader who suggests that there should be an end to the violence. Those three major developments, I think, gives us hopes that we are on the verge of starting, of the very beginning of a long road to resolve this conflict through political means. As for the situation in Iraq, I'd like to make a very quick comment to what you just mentioned about the hope that was getting a hold here in this country, is that once there will be election, Iraqis will be able to select their own government, and the next thing to happen is to see soldiers coming back home. This is, I believe, somewhat a problematic approach, which essentially thinks along the line of a quick fix, that every problem has a solution, it can be immediately, the solution can be immediately applied, and the next thing we can see or hope for is to see the American soldiers coming back home. Unfortunately, things in the Middle East have their own pace, and the hope that this will be resolved within weeks or days is somewhat unrealistic.
I believe it is really true, and I fear that the American people are being misled by our leaders, who tell us that they, you know, we're going to start pulling troops out of there. In fact, we've already pulled out 15,000 troops. They don't tell us that they just put in 15,000 more, and now they're going to pull out 15, and they say, oh, see, we're pulling troops out. But it's all perception. It has very little to do with reality. I don't see American troops ever really leaving that area, not probably for many, many years. What about your thoughts on that?
I'm not so sure that it would take that long to see the American soldiers being pulled out, but I know for sure that a quick fix is certainly something which is unapplicable to this situation in Iraq, and for that matter, I would say elsewhere in the Middle East. I hope that they can be the soldiers can be brought back sooner than later. But I don't think that that is going really to happen in weeks and months to come. It will take some time, and ultimately I believe they will all be back home.
All right, well now what's going to happen as far as the Israeli relationship to the Palestinians? I mean, there are many people within the Palestinian movement who really do not want peace. They will not rest until the Jews have been driven out of the Holy Land.
Yes, unfortunately, although there is a new leadership, and we all believe that the new leadership do represent a shift in Palestinian opinion, which seem to be in favor of resolving the Israeli-Palestinian conflict through peaceful means, we still have large groups of Palestinians, of radical Muslims among them, groups like Hezbollah or Hamas, who are very much against any political solution, let alone any solution itself for the century long conflict, short of driving out the Jews from the Holy Land. It will take some time, and I believe a lot of effort, and we trust the new Palestinian leadership to be committed to this effort and this re-engagement to pursue a solution based on political means, and to quell all those pressures and the violence that we might see coming from those radical groups who would try and push harder and apply more violence.
Well, now, of course, my concern is that the United States government is giving a great deal of money to the Palestinian government. And, of course, I wonder how much of that is going to end up in the hands of the terrorists. We were doing that when Yasser Arafat was there. We were funding him, and he was certainly funding the terrorists. And, of course, we give money to Israel. We give money to Egypt. But, you know, are we really going to be able to buy peace over there by giving money to tyrants like Yasser Arafat? And, of course, possibly the money we're giving now will be used by the terrorists. It was under Yasser Arafat.
I have to say at least one thing for the American way to support the Palestinians. United States was very careful to make sure that not one penny will be given will be put in a Yasser Arafat's pockets, namely in his Swiss bank accounts, and was very careful for that matter to control each and every dollar so it would not end up with terrorist or terrorist organization. This happened not to be the case with other country, with other support that comes from all over, and which is much bigger as far as sum of money goes, and is much more significant in its quantity, that other countries have been supporting Arafat financially and otherwise or in kind in the last 12 years or so. I'm pretty sure that this is not the case with the United States administration, who did everything in its effort to prevent money from coming into Yasser Arafat's coffers.
Oh, but of course he somehow got about $1 billion or hundreds of millions of dollars anyway. And if you give money to the Palestinians, how do you know where it's really going to go? It's sort of like when we give money to some organization, they will use money that, of course, that money for one thing, that frees money to go in other things. Somewhere or other, Yasser Arafat was able to accumulate vast sums of money.
He did indeed, no question about it. But those money who he made use of in quite a corrupted way were not American monies that we know of. The American administration's support and assistance to the Palestinians was directed through NGOs, non-government organizations, into only projects that were approved by American officials and were closely watched. So I don't believe that those zillions of dollars that Arafat controlled were coming from the United States one way or another.
Well, of course, my concern is we see over in Iraq, they simply misplaced $9 billion. They have no idea where it went. $9 billion, they have no idea where it went. If we can't figure out where $9 billion went within Iraq, you know, I'm so concerned that we take money from poor people in a rich country like America and give it to rich people in a poor country like Palestine, and the people over there are impoverished and... Really, it's so I feel very sorry for the Palestinian people, because it would appear that certainly the last thing Arafat really wanted was peace. He'd lose his power position.
No question. Arafat was a corrupted person who was surrounded with corrupted people. And as a result, the Palestinians had gone through a long period of terrible suffering, economic one, social one. Before anything else, and they should blame only one person for that matter, and that is Yasser Arafat himself, and nobody but him. Luckily, this is not the issue anymore, and we like to see the money that's being directed to the Palestinians to really be of help and reaching the people in helping them, supporting them, and recovering the Palestinian economy that is really in shambles.
Well, when we get back, I really want to talk about pulling the Israeli settlements out of Gaza. There are many Israeli patriots who are very, very concerned about that. And as Israel gives up more and more and more land in the name of peace, peace seems to be increasingly elusive. And they've given up control of so much of the land there in the Holy Land now, and I just wonder if giving up more is really going to... It's sort of like feeding a tiger meat, hoping he's going to become a vegetarian. We'll be right back here with Moshe Fox. A very important book is called AIDS, The Unnecessary Epidemic. Actually, it's a book I wrote back in 1991 that tells you the story of the politics of the AIDS epidemic and the fact that doctors have been blocked at every turn from doing what was really necessary to stop the spread of this horrible plague, both in the United States and throughout the world. AIDS, The Unnecessary Epidemic, it gives you my story of my effort working with an organized medicine, the fact that the doctors of the state of California consistently voted and supported an effective public health policy, and at every turn their efforts were frustrated by those working within organized medicine, both at the state and national level, and the tragedy is that people are dying in America today unnecessarily. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for AIDS, The Unnecessary Epidemic, because you need to understand the background to this epidemic to understand what is really happening medically in America today.
This is health journalist Bill Sardi. In November of 1991, the 60 Minutes television show first reported on the French paradox, the fact the French violate every dietary rule for good health, eat a diet rich in fats and calories, and yet exhibit far better cardiovascular health than North Americans. Over a decade later, we know that molecules called polyphenols are responsible for the health benefits in red wine, but those molecules only remain stable in a sealed bottle of red wine. Longevinix is the first dietary supplement to stabilize red wine molecules in a sealed capsule, just like the corked bottle of red wine, providing red wine polyphenols without the calories, alcohol, and sulfite preservatives. One Longevinix capsule is equivalent in polyphenols to drinking 5 glasses of red wine. Call 866-405-4000 today to order Longevinix. It's a revolutionary dietary supplement. 866-405-4000.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Thierry. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious-tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
Hi, this is Joyce Riley, and most of you now know why so many people agree that Miracle 2 soap really is a miracle. Miracle 2 products are now being used by farmers and ranchers to increase their yield. Mechanics and machinists use it in their shops. Chiropractors and physicians are using Miracle 2, and the uses are simply too numerous to mention. Dr. Stan and the folks at Radio Liberty knew right away that the listeners would benefit tremendously by using Miracle 2 products. You can enjoy the benefits of Miracle 2 and help Radio Liberty continue to broadcast Dr. Stan's message by calling 800-544-8927 to order your Miracle 2 today. After you've tried Miracle 2 around the house, you'll probably do just what so many others have done. Get rid of all those toxic cleaners and chemicals under your sink. Call Radio Liberty and order your Miracle 2 today. 800-544-8927. 800-544-8927. Dr. Stan Monteith and so many listeners know that Miracle 2 soap isn't just soap. It's a miracle.
Well, Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon is Moshe Fox, who is the Minister of Religious and Interfaith Affairs with the Israeli Embassy in Washington, D.C. And I was asking about really what's happening as far as pulling your settlements out of Gaza. Isn't that simply going to bring the radicals closer to your southern border so they can more effectively shell, you know, the major part of Israel, which is ever shrinking? Can you actually ever placate people who are intent upon destroying you?
Well, you are indicating certain risks that Israel is willing to take while pulling out settlements, Jewish settlements, from within Gaza Strip. And no doubt there are certain risks there. But the decisions that the government of Israel, headed by Prime Minister Sharon, was that we cannot afford, the risk staying on, which seemed to be even greater than pulling out. And among the two evils, so to speak, the government decided to pull out the settlements and try to stop terrorism and terrorists within the Gaza Strip, not to spill over into Israel proper.
Well, do you think we can, will this be effective? This is the major thing. I mean, we always hear about how, we're going to have peace if we just give up more land. And I'm speaking now as if I were an Israeli. But, then, of course, we see these people so intent upon disrupting the peace process. And it seems like every time you give more, you show weakness. Apparently they're going to release a lot of the terrorists now, a lot of the hardline terrorists. Won't they be right back doing terrorism? Isn't that what terrorists do?
I like to remind ourselves something which maybe has been forgotten or sort of pushed aside. Israel so far hasn't given up much of the territory altogether. And yet we're not being able to stop the violence. So it's not like we are giving and giving and giving and the violence doesn't come to an end. This is not, doesn't seem to be the case or the reality that we are facing. But here the decision about Gaza was that the risk that we are taking in staying on there seem to be greater than the one that we might have while pulling out. And at least the decision was to try this and in cooperation with the Palestinians, so with the hope that the terrorists and the violence can be contained.
I see. And are you optimistic about this, or are you sort of, as a representative of the government, sort of in a position where you really can't express your personal views?
No, listen, I can certainly express my own personal views, and I think that in this respect I reflect the feelings of many Israelis. It seems that a whole wave of optimism sort of swept the country, but I would rather call it a very cautious kind of optimism. We have recent polls, were taken, public opinion polls, the last one came in this morning, to suggest, and I'm not going to share with you all the detailed data coming out, but only two figures to illustrate this kind of optimism. There are 7 out of 10 Israelis who were saying that they believe that the new leader and the new leader Palestinian leadership, headed by Abu Mazen, is committed to a peaceful solution. And in some 6 out of 10 Israelis are under the impression or believe that this Muhammad Abbas, this new leader, can bring a stop and end to the violence. So we follow those developments with somewhat optimism, but with a lot of cautious that is based on experience. We have been there. We have lived through it. We have listened to all those promises which seem to fail so far. And yet, we believe that there is new options and some new horizons open up with some hope.
All right, we'll be back in just a moment with our very best special guest this afternoon. Would you be willing to take calls from our listeners?
Oh, yes, of course.
All right.
Anglo-American establishment, I give you the documentation for Professor Quigley's allegation that there was a secret society created in England that ultimately came to dominate England and ultimately came to dominate the United States of America. The Anglo-American establishment will give you the books that you can read, written by men who were actually involved in the original secret society. Professor Quigley opens his book saying that most people have heard of the Rhodes Scholarships, and most people, a few people, have actually heard that Cecil Rhodes wrote a confession of faith, which was attached to his first five wills, talking about the formation of a secret society. But what almost no one in America realizes today is that that secret society was actually formed and still exists to this very day. The Anglo-American Establishment by Professor Quigley, Bill Clinton's mentor, is one of the most important books you'll ever read, and available by calling 1-800-5-HIV-WAR.
Sophisticated investors are buying gold and silver today because the dollar has lost almost 50% of its value in relationship to the euro, and the price of gold and silver has increased almost 40%. If you're interested in learning more about precious metal investing, why don't you call Bo at 831-423-0177. That's 831-423-0177. Or visit him at Elliott's Stamp and Coin Shop in downtown Santa Cruz at 141 South River Street in the San Lorenzo office building, which is located between Trader Joe's and the Signature Twin Movie Theater. Bo's telephone number is 831-423-0177. That's 831-423-0177. And he's located at 141 South River Street in the San Lorenzo office building. And if you mention you heard about Elliott Stamp and Coin Shop on Radio Liberty, why, you'll get a 15% discount on some non-investment items.
Leading-edge dentists know the profound effect dental materials and procedures have on the health of the entire body. If you've been searching for a holistic trained dentist who can safely treat you, look no further. Dr. David Biles has been a leader in the Santa Cruz dental community for nearly 20 years. He built a solid reputation providing exceptionally high quality cosmetic and restorative dental care long before learning the very real hazards of common dental practices. Now, as a faculty member of the Institute of Natural Dentistry, Dr. Biles has begun lecturing nationally to other dentists on alternative and complementary dental care. On request, Dr. Biles will safely remove toxic dental materials from your mouth while substituting them with safe, non-allergenic restorations. Call Dr. Biles today and take the next step to improve your health. With sedation and nitrous oxide available, Dr. Biles can help even the most anxious patients. Call 423-0121 and schedule a visit now. That's 423-0121.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and right now we have Fred calling from Salinas, and of course we'll take Fred's call, and then I want to talk a little bit about something that really deeply concerns me, and that is, of course, is the Iranian nuclear threat. Iran is certainly working very hard to develop the ability to produce nuclear weapons. My understanding from some time, we've read from very reliable sources, that Iran has a few weapons that they bought on the open market, but once she's able, of course, to produce them, she can churn them out and really destabilize the whole situation in the Middle East. Before we get to that subject, let's go to Fred calling from Salinas. Hi, Fred. Did you have a question to comment?
Yes, I'm just wondering if your guest had ever read a book by a man named John Perkins called Confessions of an Economic Hitman. And in that book, he'll find out why we really went into Iraq and that we really don't have any idea that we're ever going to leave that country or not.
Well, I fear that you may well be right, but thank you so much. Do you know anything at all? Have you ever read the book Confessions of an Economic Hitman by John Perkins, which is, I think, number 10 on the New York Times bestseller list? Mr. Fox?
Yes, hi.
Oh, I just wondered, are you acquainted with that book at all that Fred was talking about?
No, unfortunately, I'm not aware, not familiar with this book.
All right, fine. Well, then that settles that question very clearly. My concern, and I think the concern of many people who are watching very closely in the unfolding events over there, is certainly the threat of Iran developing the ability to mass produce nuclear weapons and destabilizing that whole area, which of course would put Israel into a terribly, terribly difficult position. What are your thoughts, or do you have any thoughts on that at all?
Well,
we view the Iranian nuclear program as a real threat, but we don't view it as a threat which is directed only against Israel. We see it as a threat to the stabilization of the entire region, and a threat that need to be dealt by the entire international community to address this unstable force that is moving ahead with a program which can cause havoc to the entire region.
And I agree with you, but the things that nobody seems to really have the courage to do much of everything, it's sort of like, well, in Europe, everybody's very upset about what's going on, but they continue training with Iran. Russia, you know, says, oh, this is terrible, and yet they continue trading with Iran. China's exactly the same. And of course, my concern is that somebody's going to have to take a position of leadership, either Israel or the United States, or perhaps the two of them together, to stop this, because the Iranians aren't going to stop producing their weapons anymore. Then the North Koreans stopped producing their nuclear weapons, and now, after lying for a number of years, they finally said, ha, we fooled you, we've got nuclear weapons now. Now what are you going to do about it? What happens if one day the Iranians say that, or must we stop that before that happens? And what is Israeli's position? Certainly in the early 1980s, Israel did something which was totally unheard of. They bombed the nuclear facilities that Saddam Hussein was building, and everybody condemned Israel, and yet what they did was really a favor for that whole region of the world.
I believe that this is a problem that need other countries, other members of the international community to be engaged, to come forward, to face it and to address it. It's not a problem only for the Americans, or for that matter for the Israelis. Other countries cannot have the luxury of ignore it and dismiss it. It is a problem. It's there and need to be addressed. And the sooner the better, of course.
All right, fine. Well, and I certainly hope that the countries will do something, but history tells us that countries and leaders usually don't want to take a stand. They'd far rather wait to see what happens. And, of course, then you end up, of course, with a situation like we had with Adolf Hitler or some of the other mad people of this last century. So, you know, I really think that it's all very well to say, well, somebody else is going to have to do this, or we're going to have to work collectively. But I see very little evidence that this collective concept really is very effective.
It is, and that we have already in place all kind of international regimes that to deal with this kind of threat. We have international organizations which have been designed to address such a situation. What we need is to call in more countries and more attention to be put in place and to make those reactions and those engagement much more effective.
Well, we saw how effective the international community was in Rwanda. We saw how effective they are today in what's going on in Darfur. We saw how effective they were in the southern Sudan, where Christians are still being slaughtered there. So, you know, and of course we see how effective the international community is in Zimbabwe today, and how effective they are in the Congo, where over 3 million people have been slaughtered there in this continuing warfare. So, well, I hope you're right, Mr. Fox. I hope that the international community will band together and do what's right. But I see, at least, I'm not as optimistic as you are.
Well, for that we have built the organizations and all kind of structures that are designed to work together and to address exactly such threats and misbehavior to engage as many people and countries, states, and governments to deal with it.
All right, fine. Well, now, what is the major message that you would like to get out to the American people?
Well, I would like to share with American people the long-time desire of all these ladies, and for that matter, I should say very vigorously and very in a very determined sort of approach that the desire for peace is on all Israelis' mind, without an exception. We might have some arguments and among ourselves as what is the best way to reach peace in the region, peace with our neighbors. But there is no doubt in my mind that all Israelis are united in their desire to see peace with our relations and a peaceful neighborhood where we can live in peace with, together with other countries in the region. I think for that matter Israel hasn't spared effort, energy, resources to try and enhance and reach the day where we be able to resolve this conflict we have with our neighbors and to see peace coming and taking a hold and we have seen some very promising starts along this line. Peace agreement with Egypt that has been signed some 25 years ago and still very much in place, unshakable, and peace agreement that we have signed with the Hashemite Kingdom of Jordan some 11 years ago, and we hope that we can address other countries, other conflicts that we have with other neighbors of ours, and see an end to this conflict.
Well, I certainly hope and pray that you're right. I'm not perhaps as optimistic as you are, but I'm sure that every Israeli would like to have peace and would like to have an end to this, and I'm sure that an awful lot of the Palestinian people would like to live in peace. Unfortunately, their leaders benefit from conflict, and it is not the people who ever create wars, ordinarily, not the average individual, but governments want wars and leaders want wars. In fact, Plato was, writing in the Republic, said, when the tyrant has disposed of his enemies by conquest or treaty, and there is nothing to fear from them, he's always out stirring up another enemy because the people want leaders. And I find that so often leaders are the ones who want to foment violence and of course, use propaganda to build up animosity and to write atrocity stories to rally the people behind them. Because, after all, if Yasser Arafat had ever declared peace, he would have lost his position. He wouldn't have been able to collect all that money from all those people and had all those hundreds of millions, if not billions, of dollars put away. How are we going to get responsible leaders in, into the countries, say, in Syria? How are we going to get responsible leaders into Iran? How are we going to get responsible leaders into countries like Pakistan that has the nuclear weapons, or into Saudi Arabia that I also understand has nuclear-tipped missiles aimed at Israel today?
I think we have seen the solution how to bring a change in those countries you just mentioned, and that is to try and expand democracy into the region.
I see.
This seemed to be the only formula that might work. At least we have seen the very beginning of it being in place, mainly among the Palestinians. Elections that took place for the first time about 6 weeks ago. We have seen elections taking place in Iraq some 3 weeks ago, and we like to see more democratic countries around us. We believe it's documented democracies are not countries to pursue wars, on the contrary. And I think if there is any hope to see an end to the conflict in the region, That would start first by introducing democratic regimes into those countries, and that will be the beginning of those dictatorial regimes that will bring an end to the world and conflicts, armed conflicts in the region.
Well, is there any the historical precedent for that? I mean, Adolf Hitler was democratically elected after he was there for a while. He suspended the Constitution, but he was democratically elected, and so was Benito Mussolini. History, of course, is old, as Plato wrote, that democracy always degenerates into despotism. They had democracies in ancient Greece. They had democracy in ancient Rome, and they did not hold up. Why should we think that man's heart has changed? I believe, my belief is that man is basically evil, and of course, usually the most evil get into positions of power. I hope and pray that you're right, but, well, I'm not as optimistic as you are. Let's hope that you're right and that I'm wrong. Do you have any last thoughts? Oh, we've got Mike calling here. Let's go ahead and put okay. Mike on before I let you go. Yeah. Hi, Mike. Do you have a question or comment for our guest?
Yeah, one question for him. If he knows, if he has any figures on how many Palestinians have been executed by Palestinians for selling land to Jews.
I know that certainly if you are, you know, you are even vaguely a pro-Israeli or even deal with the Israelis and you're Palestinian, they'll kill you, won't they?
Yes, unfortunately, we have seen this terrible phenomena too. There were, I believe, in the dozens. I don't have the exact figure in front of me, but it's in the dozens of Palestinian Arabs who were executed by their brothers, Palestinian Muslims.
If you're not militantly anti-Israel and you're a Palestinian, why your life is really in danger? This is my concern. And there's this tremendous, if you know, they have not allowed anybody who really wanted peace there to get along with the Israelis. I just hope and pray that the new Prime Minister of Palestine, the newly elected government, will be different.
I hope so too, and. Law and order is something essential to see these atrocities being eliminated once for all, and a democratic regime to be introduced with a leadership that is committed to bring an end to the violence and look for political means to end the conflict.
Well, let's pray for peace in Jerusalem.
Amen.
God bless you, and thank you so much for being with us, I guess, today. Bye-bye. Okay, fine. Thank you so very much. Mike, did you have anything else you wanted to ask?
Well, it just seemed like it's not really up to the Palestinians for the final word in the negotiations. It's really up to the whole Arab world, because they're the ones that have been funding the Palestinians all along.
You're absolutely right. But don't forget the Americans have been funding them as well.
That's right. Isn't that funny? As far as the land for peace thing goes, I think that since they're so willing to execute their own people for selling land to Jews, it really makes a statement that they don't want the Jews to have any land, and any land for peace ideas might have more to do with give us all the land, and then maybe you'll have peace if you pay enough taxes to us, etc.
Well, I think it's such a tragic situation that we have in the Middle East. And I'm not smart enough to think that I have a solution for it other than changing the hearts of men.
Yeah, well, I don't really have a lot of hope.
All right. Thank you so very much, Mike. Bye-bye. Okay, fine. And, of course, that was Mike calling from Santa Cruz. And really, I want to share with you my concern. Apparently, America has been flying drone airplanes over Iran for about a year now. This is an act of war, and Iran has not turned on their radar because they don't want us to know where the radars are. And they've not shot the planes down, although this is they would be justified in doing that. These are non-armed planes. But, of course, we are surveilling their country. According to Seymour Hersh, we have militarized special forces teams operating openly in some of the rural areas of Iran there. And, of course, according to Avi Lipkin, why there are similar Mossad or Israeli special forces units operating in Iran. This is an act of war. And whether the American people want to accept it or not, we are at war with Iran, and it is only a matter of time before the hostilities take place. Listen to what Condoleezza Rice is saying. Go to the Center for Policy Studies. It's Frank Gaffney's website. Frank is a spokesman for the Project for the New American Century, and read every day the articles that they post there from across the country. They're all about Iran, how Iran is a terrible threat, how we're going to have to attack, we're going to have to mobilize. Iran is threatening to attack our forces. Iran is threatening to use nuclear devices on our forces over there. It's all propaganda, preparing the American people for war. You saw the same thing before we went into Iraq. You saw the same thing before we went to the First World War and the Second World War and Vietnam. The propaganda tells you what's really being planned for the future. We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty.
Another of our fascinating four tape sets is entitled Concentration Camps, and it's four interviews with people talking about the move to establish concentration camps in the United States. Now, most people say that's foolish talk. We couldn't have that. And yet, if you listen to these tapes, you'll find out that those camps are a reality. They are being set up in case of civil disturbance. And, of course, the authority for the establishment of the concentration camps comes from the executive orders, which were actually put through during the time of the Reagan administration. For documentation of the location and the background to the formation of these camps, their establishment, and what may very well happen, or what they may be used for in the future, I suggest you call our 800 number, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR for America. Our values, our future are under attack today.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and let me just mention for our listeners that we hope that many of you will want to get the material that we have put together that will help you to understand what's really going on in the Middle East. And probably one of the best things we've done is called Iraq, the Untold Story. It's an update of what's the little known secrets of wars and revolutions, of the origins of wars and revolutions. But this is a talk we gave that actually traces the history of the wars of the last century, beginning with the Spanish-American War in 1898, through the First World War and the Second World War, and the Korean War and the Vietnam War and the First Gulf War and the Second World War. And every one of them was planned ahead of time, and every one of them was contrived. And we give you the documentation. We give you the documentation for the fact that they didn't have to drop the bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, or we didn't have to invade Iwo Jima or Okinawa, because the Japanese had been trying to surrender for 6 months. But we couldn't let the American people know that, because how would we justify slaughtering all those Japanese? The Japanese understand that they'd been trying to surrender, and we wouldn't let them surrender. So you have to understand really the background of so many of the things. You have to understand there really is a brotherhood of darkness that wants as much violence and horror as possible. And I really fear that one day we will see the same thing here in America, because America has turned its back on God. Let me suggest you get our video, Iraq, the Untold Story. Or you get the syllabus, Iraq, the Untold Story, or better still, if you get them together, you'll get them at a reduced cost. Call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. The video, Iraq, the Untold Story. The syllabus, Iraq, the Untold Story. You need the documentation. You need to have it in your hands so you can actually see it, convince you that this incredible story is true. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course, I want to mention to all of our listeners out across America that we have a unique opportunity to republish our book at a very low price. And so, we, of course, the more we print, why, the lower the price. And this is how we can actually make an offer to you, that you can get a case of my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, which is an excellent tool to reach people. For $2 a book, you have to buy a case that says 62. That comes to $124. And, of course, you'll have to pay the shipping. And it's about $16 we send in media mail, but then we can't track it. Or about $25, perhaps, depending if you're too far away. It'll be more than that, but that would be UPS, where we can track it. But for $124, probably another $25 or $30 for shipping, whatever the UPS is, well, I will send you a case of my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, as soon as they're printed, which will be about 8 weeks. So if you're interested in getting them, what a very excellent weapon that you have to begin to reach people. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927, and my producer says it's $25 for the UPS, and so we'll send it to you for that, and if there's more than that, we'll absorb it. This is the Brotherhood of Darkness, which goes into the organizations that work behind the scenes, which are motivated by a spiritual agenda. And you can't really understand so much of what's going on today unless you understand there is a spiritual agenda. Why did the Supreme Court take God and prayer out of our schools? And why did the church allow it to happen? Why have administration after administration said one thing and done exactly another? Why did we really go into Iraq? It had nothing to do with weapons of mass destruction, because we knew they did not have weapons of mass destruction. Why then, we went in because Saddam Hussein was a wicked and evil man, but remember, we backed Saddam Hussein all during the 1980s, and if you read the book written by a man with a CIA who was in Kurdistan in 1995, he was a senior CIA agent there, he will tell you that every Iraqi he met believed the United States was keeping Saddam Hussein in power. And many believed he was working for the CIA. Now, I'm not suggesting that's true, but I am saying that we allowed him to stay in power. We knew he was smuggling oil, and we did not try to stop him smuggling oil. Why was that? Why was it that every time the Iraqi military tried to overthrow Saddam Hussein in the 1990s, we betrayed them? It's all there in that wonderful book, See No Evil by Robert Baer, which we do carry, and I hope we still have copies of it, but it's all covered in my articles on the internet at radioliberty.com, and we tell you the entire story of how we kept Saddam Hussein in power, and every time the military tried to overthrow him, why, of course, we intervened and betrayed them. And then we invaded Iraq, supposedly to get rid of Saddam Hussein and restore stability, and you can see what a great job we've done. I do not believe our leaders are foolish. I think they know exactly what they're doing. We're just trying to train the military. Why did we destroy the military? Why did we kill some of the general officers there? The head of the Air Force was tortured to death. Who was convicted of that? Nobody was convicted of that. Our men were simply carrying out orders. We disbanded the army. We created chaos. We disbanded the police. We created chaos. We fired everybody who knew how to run the electric system. We fired everybody who knew how to run the water system. We fired everybody who knew how to run the sewer system. And then we wonder why we have chaos in Iraq today. Our leaders are not foolish. If we can put a man on the moon, if we can send probes to Mars, if we can read your newspaper from space, you know, those satellites we have up there, and yet we can't bring law and order to Iraq, something's wrong with this picture, but you have to understand the spirits of forces. That's why you need to understand the Brotherhood of Darkness. If you haven't read the book, it's available by calling 1-800-544-8927, but you can get a whole case of the book by calling that 1-800-544-8927. You can get them for $124. You need to get the book. You need to help us to get the truth out. Remember our website, radioliberty.com, and please pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision, protection. Until tomorrow, may the Lord be with you.